Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. We got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. It is the Tuesday night episode, which means we are here previewing week four of the Big Ten slate. We're not going to go through every single game tonight. We're going to save some of those games for Thursday night when I'm on with Andrew from the Nittany Blues podcast. We'll talk about Ohio State, Penn State, some of those teams, but the games that I think are some of the biggest ones of the weekend we are going to be talking about tonight, getting those out to you all early so that way you can marinate on them. You can really think about them, digest them, probably watch the video at least four or five extra times. Right, Zach? I mean, you really have to watch this video to have it all in, right?
I mean, with the slate we have, not to mention there's going to be some salivating over a pig being fought over in Minnesota. So, I mean, at least four to five times.
And Dave is already ready for it. He's already in the chat. Before we even get started, it's bacon week. So he says, who hates Iowa? Dave says, we hate Iowa. I'm not saying I hate you, Iowa, but I know Dave does.
I'm curious if Cade McNamara loves Iowa after the way he's played the past couple. No, that's a low blow. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. We'll keep moving.
It wasn't exactly a lie. Okay, we are going to move on. We are going to be talking about Purdue tonight, which, I mean, when I told Zach we were like that, he was like, oh, wow, the two teams that struggled terribly last week. Yay. We're talking about Purdue and Oregon State, Iowa and Minnesota, Rutgers, Virginia Tech, Michigan State and Boston College, USC, Michigan and Nebraska, Illinois. Those are the games that are on the docket for tonight, and I am excited to get this one out of the way. Purdue versus Oregon State. Zach, both of these teams did not look impressive last week. Now, Oregon State did stick with Oregon a little bit into halftime, right? It was, what, 14-21 or something like that at halftime. So there was a little bit of a closer score there. Purdue was nowhere to be found at halftime. It was like 35-0, whatever that score was. I don't even remember. There were so many points. But at the end of the day, this is still a new game, a new slate. Purdue shuts out Indiana State week one. They come back 2 weeks later. They give up 66 points to Notre Dame. They still have not gotten a single turnover this season on defense. They have not had any interceptions, no fumble recoveries, nothing like that. Zach, what are your thoughts going into this game?
I'm really curious to see how the Boilermakers respond. Because I appreciate how you contrasted, like, Oregon State got beat handily against maybe a top five team in the country when it's all said and done. Oregon looked like themselves. And Notre Dame is, obviously, they can be really good, but they just lost to a MAC team. Oregon State competed for a while. Purdue never competed. And I think there's a real question of how does Ryan Walters get this team ready after a butt kicking like that? And do they rally the troops or do they continue to wilt? And that's what I want to see is what does Purdue do to really get back and circle the wagons? And so my question is, can Hudson Card be that on-field leader that we thought he could be? You know, I think he can still be a good player. More importantly, can the offensive line block? Can the defense, can they do anything?
I hear it's important for the offensive line to block, Zach. I'm no expert in football, but I hear that is a strategy that typically results in wins.
Yes, that was my Gary Danielson moment of the week. If the team scores more, it will. Oh, good analysis.
The majority of the time, you win if your team scores more.
That's my John Maddenisms. There we go. You need to see. Okay, but I think that my concern, and it's with that secondary, they could not tackle the ball carrier, and Oregon State, to their credit, can run the ball pretty well. You know, their quarterback can run, running backs are running well. And that's my biggest concern in this game is, can the safeties actually wrap up if the running backs get to the second level? And can the defensive line get some penetration and kind of junk up that running game? Because if they can't, I don't think it's going to be nearly as bad as what it was, but it's going to be a long day for Purdue if they can't stop the run.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. Dylan Thienemann, surprisingly, and actually the other safety, Antonio Stevens, they both had four missed tackles on the day, which four missed tackles, you don't want to see that many for your team in a game. It can happen, and it's certainly not the worst thing, but you would like to be better than that. But four missed tackles for each of your safeties in one game, yikes. That is not good, and that's not going to get it done. So Dylan Thienemann, the All-American for this year, he has got to be better, quite frankly. Yep. And I'm not trying to put the entire loss on Dylan Thienemann. Obviously, that was a blowout. That was a loss that, you know, many people contributed to. However, it's something that Dylan Thienemann, as the leader or one of the leaders of this defense, needs to really step up and say, look, we're not going to have that kind of performance again. For me, one of the biggest things on the offensive side of the ball for Purdue is they have to get themselves in good situations on third down. Purdue did not do a great job of converting third downs their last game, and one of the reasons why is because they were not in very many third and short situations. Like you said, the offensive line was not blocking very well. Hudson Card had a lot of pressure. He was throwing the ball away. He was getting sacked. They couldn't really run the ball hardly at all. And so when you're in a situation like that, then you're in third and nine, third and eight, third and 11, and you're saying, Hudson Card, please pull a rabbit out of your hat here and get us a third down conversion, which, you know, sometimes there are teams that just excel at that and do a very good job. I don't think Purdue is one of those teams. I don't think Purdue has the players on the outside that they've had before. And Ryan Walters is changing the way Purdue has played a little bit in the past. Purdue, I mean, under Jeff Brohm, Purdue was offense, quarterback play, wide receivers. You had a good running game. But Ryan Walters is coming in, and he wants the offense to be a little bit more conservative. Not saying that he doesn't want to throw the ball. Obviously, he does. But he wants the offense to be a little bit more conservative and rely on that defense. And like we said, if your defense isn't tackling, there's only so much your offense can do. And we'll have to see if Oregon State takes advantage of that or if Purdue corrects the issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to think that Purdue isn't as bad as we thought, or as what was shown by Notre Dame. But I also don't think they're as good as what we saw against Indiana State. I think Indiana State's a bad team. I'm curious your score prediction here. For me, I think it's going to come down to the running games, and I don't think Purdue's going to be able to run the ball. And that's what makes me lean. I think Hudson Card will make a couple plays. Ultimately, I've got Oregon State in a lower scoring game, 24-13.
Interesting. I have Oregon State in this one, 31-24. I do think Purdue is going to find their offense a little bit better in this game, but I think that Oregon State is just going to find their offense more. I think that Purdue is probably going to continue to struggle to stop the run. Unfortunately for them, I think that McCoy might have some success running around a little bit, not just passing the ball, but also running it. For me, Hudson Card, he has to distribute the ball around more than just to his tight end. Max Clair is a great tight end, don't get me wrong. I think he's a very underrated tight end in Big Ten football. However, he cannot be your leading wide receiver on the team. You have to have players on the outside who are going to get open more and provide that provide that downfield threat for Hudson Card. So yeah, my prediction, 31-24, Oregon State. I really wanted to pick Purdue. I was looking for every way possible to try and pick Purdue, but I think at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to the coaching situation for me. And if Ryan Walters can outcoach the Oregon State head coach, you know, then I think that Purdue can win this one. But I mean, Ryan Walters had 2 weeks to prepare for Notre Dame, yeah, and they came out looking like how they came out. So I, you know, sue me, but I just don't trust Ryan Walters very much after that performance.
Well, if I can just push back a little bit, and I know I said last week that you have to evaluate the Ryan Walters situation. There are some coaches that historically just really struggle with how they use the bye week. You know, I think back to even Jim Tressel, and I always hated when he had a bye week because he always came out flat that the next week. And I think the questions are valid. I am curious how Walters responds. And I think I see a pathway for Purdue to win. I think another layer of difficulty here is that it's in Corvallis and not in West Lafayette. And so
yeah, that's another big thing for me too. I forgot to mention.
Yeah. And I think if this is home, I like the chances a little bit more for the Boilermakers, but you get your butts kicked, and then you have to travel halfway across, or not halfway across, all the way across the country to face a ticked off Oregon State team that can tell themselves, we were in it for the first 2.5 quarters against Oregon.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that bodes well for them in their situation. Let's get to a couple comments here. Dave says, Notre Dame does Notre Dame things, losing to a team they're supposed to beat and then kicking means names for the rest of the season, or memes. I don't know. But yes, that is a very Notre Dame thing to do. I was just thinking about that after the game. I was like, this is such a Notre Dame thing to lose to a MAC team and then go out and destroy a Big Ten team.
Yeah. Particularly a Marcus Freeman Notre Dame thing.
Right. Philip brings up a good point here, and I want to kind of gauge your thoughts on this before we move on, Zach. Ryan Walters wasn't ready to be a head coach when they hired him. He needed more time as an assistant. So I struggle with this because I do think Ryan Walters did a good job at Illinois. But last night I was listening to an SEC podcast, and they were talking a lot about how they believe that you should never hire somebody to be a head coach in the SEC. And they said, like, they were actually giving the Big Ten some credit. They were saying, we actually kind of think the Big Ten should be doing the same thing. And they mentioned Ryan Walters, and they said, why is this guy a head coach? The guy just got blown out by Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame. Now, Marcus Freeman has a little bit of a better situation here because of who Notre Dame is, but they were saying the same thing. They were like, you know, Notre Dame shouldn't have hired Marcus Freeman. That's how you have situations like this with Marshall and Northern Illinois. And so my question to you, Zach, is do you agree with that sentiment that the Big Ten should not be hiring first-time head coaches, not first-time, like, you know, coaches or, like, coordinators or anything like that? Like, their very first time, like, you need to be a head coach at a G5 school. You need to be a head coach at a Big 12 school or something like that. Because I tend to agree with them. I think if you are the Big Ten, you have as much money as you have, there is no reason. I'm not trying to dog Ryan Walters here. I'm just saying, like, if with the money and the prestige that the Big Ten has, there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to go to the Big 12 and the ACC and say, hey, you have a coach that's really good. We want to take him and bring him over to our squad. Even for a team like Purdue, they should be able to. Look what Indiana did. They just went out and got Kirk Cignetti from James Madison, one of the best G5 teams out there, and he's done great so far. And so you don't have a little bit of this slouch because he came in, he brought a lot of his guys in, and he's an experienced head coach. With Ryan Walters, you have a little bit of the slouch because he's learning on the job, and we have to understand that. But at the same time, is that Purdue's fault for hiring somebody who was a first-time head coach? You let him cut his teeth somewhere else and then come in. I'm curious your thoughts on it, Zach.
I think Dave Valensky has a good thought to this, and it's kind of my thought. I think it's probably more nuanced than that. And I in some ways I agree with you. I think it's always good to see a more extensive resume. That being said, we've seen a lot of coaches at Purdue, no less, Daryl Hazel being one of them, cut his teeth in the Group of Five, and he's like surefire, great head coach. And I think the reality is you need, like, I think it's more about fit, program fit, than like what your resume is, which is, I think that's part of the struggle with Fickell right now is at Wisconsin. Like, he cut his teeth at Cincinnati, got him to a playoff bid, but he doesn't fit he is not building the program to fit the Wisconsin culture. And I'm not sure Ryan Walters, a defensive first head coach, really fits Purdue. Whereas Jeff Brohm, you know, basketball on grass type of stuff, that's kind of been their identity. I wonder, because there's just been a lot of Group of Five coaches that have gone up and then just stunk. And so, and then contrast that, Kirby Smart, you know, he was never a head coach, goes to Georgia, takes a few years to figure it out, wins two national championships. Ryan Day, never a head coach. He's been to the playoff multiple times. I think it really depends. And so I think with some guys and some programs, I think it's more about evaluating your pathway and your culture. And I culture is overblown, but I think Ryan Walters has to figure out, how do I actually create an offensive identity that's similar to the effective Purdue programs of the past, rather than thinking, how do I make this the defensive identity that I want it to be? That's my thought.
A great point. I think that's a great point. I do get very annoyed when teams have an identity and things are going well, and then they just try to swap that identity. Now, I didn't think that that was going to happen as much with Purdue because of the offensive coordinator. Oh, what's his name? Ryan Walters brought in, Graham something. Anyway, I thought he was going to come in, and I mean, he knew Hudson Card, and they were together, mm-hmm. and I thought, okay, this offense can work. Like, yes, Ryan Walters is going to get that defense right, but I don't think the offense is going to fall off. Now, still yet to be seen, right? Yeah. I mean, they did score, what, 45-49 on Indiana State? Yeah. So I'm not trying to say the offense has dropped off or anything, but I do think Ryan Walters is coming in with a little bit of a different mindset than Jeff Brohm has. And I'm not saying you have to hire the same exact guy,
right?
Because I don't think that's always the best case scenario. But I do think bringing in somebody who was offensive minded might have been a smoother transition than Jeff Brohm. So
yeah,
I still think Ryan Walters can do it. I'm not trying to say Ryan Walters can't do it. I'm not trying to bash the guy. I just wonder the strategy overall of hiring a head coach in today's day and age, if it is more hire the G5, hire the Big 12, hire the ACC guy rather than the coordinator from another Big Ten team. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's Graham Harrell, the former Texas Tech record breaker, is the offensive coordinator. I think there's, you know, going back to Jeff Brohm real quick, there's also a reality. Like, Jeff Brohm was like maybe the best head coach at Purdue since Joe Tiller. Not maybe, he was. And so now, and he left, like, you understand why he left. He went to his alma mater. But also, he did not leave a good transition plan. And so there is a question.
I think it's because it was abrupt. Like, he didn't plan on leaving. It just, the job became available, and he was like, how do I pass this up? Like,
yeah. And so this isn't dogging him, but there is a reality that when that happens, it may take more time. And so is this actually more of an indictment on Ryan Walters, or is it actually a reality that, like, he was left a team that got blown out by LSU 63-7 in the bowl game after winning the Big Ten West? So that is I think that is a consideration too. And maybe we just shouldn't be shocked that it's taking this long to try to build something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. It does take a while to build something. So like I said, I'm not trying to say Ryan Walters was the wrong hire or that he's not a good coach or anything like that. I'm just saying, I heard that they mentioned Ryan Walters, and I was like, I think this is, you know, fits with what Philip is saying here. I think it's a good conversation.
It warrants conversation. And I'm trying to give the other side, but I do have the same questions about Ryan Walters. So I don't think what you're saying is like, oh, you're wrong. I think it's more like there's nuance to it, but there's questions.
And I think a lot of those questions will be answered if he pulls out a win here.
Yep. Agreed.
So, Sean Garner, have you picked the game between Nebraska and Illinois yet? No, that'll be our last game that we do tonight. So stick around for that one. I know everybody's excited about that one, so I want to make sure we don't miss it. Trying to make sure we don't have any comments. Brian is here. Brian says, Walters had the Illini defense ranked number one. It was worth taking a shot with him. You get Illinois ranked number one in anything, and you're worth taking a look at. I mean, Brett Bielema was there, and Brett Bielema has always had good defenses, but you're right. I mean, Illinois is not recruiting at that level. And they did have a favorable schedule that year, but you're right. I mean, he put Devin Witherspoon in the NFL, which I know Aaron Henry had a lot to do with that as well. It wasn't just Ryan Walters. But yeah, I mean, you have Illinois as the number one defense in the nation. That's really impressive. So again, not trying to say Ryan Walters is the wrong hire, but I do think the question is at least entertained. So, All right, we are going to hit a commercial really fast, guys, and then we'll be back to talk about Iowa, Minnesota. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis, making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description, minutestosports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, JR and Zach Guggenheim breaking it down for you. We are going to get into the Iowa-Minnesota game. As Dave said earlier, it's bacon week for Minnesota. And Philip, he's already dropped off five pigs at the butcher this morning.
Ooh, so. Can I have one? Please?
Getting ready for it. Getting ready for it. All right, Zach, Iowa-Minnesota. To me, this is kind of crazy because Minnesota has just come off two shutouts back-to-back, Rhode Island, Nevada, not exactly the best teams in the world, but still, I think regardless of who the team is, you shut a team out, I think you get credit for that. I mean, It is very, very difficult, no matter who you're playing, to try and shut a team out for the entire game. So props to Minnesota on that. They actually look like the more put-together defensive team in this situation.
Yes.
Iowa, however, gave up a punt return touchdown last game. Their punter didn't exactly punt the ball super well. I don't know if it was on the coverage as much as, well, I shouldn't say, I don't know. I think it was more on the punter than it was the coverage itself. And credit to Troy, they had good blocking on that play, didn't have any penalties or anything. But still, I think that this is not the same game it was last year with Iowa-Minnesota. If people are coming into this and saying, oh yeah, you know, defensive battle, it's going to be, you know, 3-6 final score, don't think that's exactly the case. I think Iowa has a better running game this year. I think that Minnesota has some real dudes on defense who can make a difference in this one. And I think Cade McNamara is a bit of a question mark. I think Max Brosmer is getting better, and I like some of the stuff that I've seen from him lately. But at the end of the day, like, to me, this might be a quarterback battle that decides the game. What's your thoughts, Zach?
I tend to agree. Now, I'll say a couple things. One, I think it's interesting that Minnesota played UNC week one, where I think Hampton is probably the better back, but their O-line was not nearly as good as Iowa's in the run blocking. But the quarterback, I think the quarterback is still a question mark, and the receivers are clearly not as good as North Carolina's. And so I think from a defensive perspective, it really, like, I have a question of who wins that battle of D-line versus O-line, because I think Minnesota's D-line has really improved, you know, Ja Joyner on that line and several other guys. Depth has really been bolstered there. I am concerned. It doesn't seem like Justin Wally's going to play on the back end. So, like, that's tough. But then I think about, well, who's going to exploit them from the Iowa receiving, like the Iowa receivers. And I'm like, the young receivers have made plays like more than they did a year ago, but I still don't see Vander Zee and Brown and those boys. Like, I just don't see them really exploiting the back end, even without Wally. So I have a hard time thinking that Iowa gets a ton of points with Cade McNamara being a gunslinger. But on the flip side, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, you've mentioned this several times, Minnesota's offensive line is a mess. They keep changing things on the offensive line. There's not a lot of consistency. And I'm like, I think the one area where Minnesota could really exploit Iowa's defense is big plays, because that's where Iowa has struggled against Troy, against Iowa State. But are they going to have time to protect Brosmer? So that, I mean, that's just, I think those are a couple of my thoughts.
Sorry, I was muted. There for a second, and I was looking at one of my stats I was going to reference. I agree. To me, Minnesota has done a really, really good job of getting turnovers, right? They have 9 turnovers on the year. That's 5th in the nation. So Minnesota's done a very good job of getting turnovers. What they haven't excelled as much in is getting the team off the field on third down, or getting the defense off the field on third down. They are 40.5% at third down defense. On the flip side, Iowa, they only have 5 takeaways, which is 25th in the nation. Still not bad, but not nearly as good as Minnesota. And their third down defense is 24.4%, which is 12th. In the nation. So to me, this is going to come down to turnovers. I think that with Iowa's running game, they should be able to convert enough third downs to move the ball down the field a little bit. All right. I'm not saying like it's going to be a 40-30 game or something like that. But I do think that this is going to be probably closer to 20 than it is 10 in my mind. And I think it's going to be a huge test for Cade McNamara if he can take care of the ball well enough, because they got some ball hawking dudes on that Minnesota defense. And if Cade McNamara is not careful, he's going to lose the ball. And Caleb Johnson's going to have to protect the ball too. I mean, you know, he does a very good job with the way he carries the ball, but all it takes is one helmet to hit that ball the right way, and that ball can pop out and a Minnesota defender can fall on it. So he's going to have to be very careful with how he carries it. And Minnesota overall, if they don't get those turnovers, can they stop Iowa on third down? To me, I never like to rely on the turnovers. I never like to say, oh, we're a turnover defense, and that's what we're going to rely on. Because I think if offenses really buckle down with it, and they only turn the ball over maybe once or twice, I think that you can still win that game. However, I don't know if I trust Iowa's offense enough, even with the rushing tack being better, to say, even if they don't turn the ball over, they're still going to move the ball down the field enough. It's a horrible dilemma in my mind trying to pick this game, because I think both these teams do things very well, and I think both these teams have a few weaknesses here and there that the other team could exploit, but I don't know if the other team is good enough to exploit those weaknesses.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my question to you then, Zach, is do you believe in Minnesota's Do you believe in Iowa's offense enough and their special teams to score enough points in this situation that if both teams take care of the ball, Iowa's offense will win out with Caleb Johnson and the way that offensive line has been running? Or do you distrust Cade McNamara enough to say he's going to turn the ball over at some point and Minnesota's going to find a way to win this game because of the turnovers and Dragan Cashett's, no matter how far away, I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, no matter how far away it is, he's going to be able to hit 2, 3, maybe even 4 field goals to get them ahead enough in this game. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think my key to the game is a little different. And I agree. I think turnovers are a big deal. I am honestly very concerned about just the big plays that Iowa has allowed. And while Brosmer has not hit a ton of deep shots, I think they have the best receiver in this game in Daniel Jackson. And I would not be shocked, and I think this is where my prediction is leaning, if Iowa is consistently getting to plus territory and kicking field goals, and Minnesota is a bit more herky-jerky. Like, I think they'll be able to run some with Darius Taylor, but I think Iowa's front seven is gonna stonewall that running game quite a bit. But I think they're gonna allow a big play or two. And while I think Minnesota, they may have less yards, I think Minnesota will score one more touchdown than Iowa, which lets them have Kesich have his shining moment of redemption for a 17-16 win.
You are betting on the kicker who lost the game, you could argue, twice against North Carolina. All right, I like it. Bold move. To your credit, Iowa has allowed 3 plays of 60-plus yards this season. Minnesota has only allowed 1 of 30-plus yards. That was the longest play they allowed, was a 30-some-yard play. I forget who that was against. But, yeah, I mean, this could be a huge factor. Can Darius Taylor get loose, and can he run the ball? Can Max Brosmer find those guys downfield and create a big play that gets them in field goal range once, maybe even twice, or create that touchdown that gets them the win? To me, I think Minnesota has the pieces to win this game. I think it's at home for Minnesota, correct? Yes.
Yes.
It's at home for Minnesota. I think they have the pieces here, but I still look at this Iowa team and Caleb Johnson, how he's been able to run the ball. I think that Cade McNamara, I think he fixes his turnover issues here. He takes care of the ball. I'm not saying he has a spectacular game. I don't even know if he throws for over 200 yards in this game. Probably, you know, 170 at most. But I think I'm going to pick Iowa. Even though the chat is very Iowa hatred heavy, I think I'm going to pick Iowa in this one. I think it's going to be something like...
Boo this man!
I know, right? No. I think it's going to be something along the lines of like 16-14. I think that there could be like a safety mixed in there. There could be some like crazy field goal kicking or something like that that gets us up there. I know, positive Mike. You know it's bad when the positive guy is booing you in the chat. But honestly, like, I could see it going either way. I think both teams have good parts of their game that could win this game, and both and the other team has deficiencies that all you have to do is excel in one of those areas and you could win this game on both sides of the ball. Zach, who are you picking?
Minnesota by a point. Yeah, 17-16. Yeah.
So we both got it closer to 20 than we do 10.
Yep. So. Yeah. And I think this might be the, as dysfunctional as it might be at some time, at some point, I bet this is the best game of the week.
You think it's best game? Coming down to the wire, probably.
Yeah.
Positive Mike says, you really sucked all the positivity out of the chat. I probably did.
I'm here to bring it back, Positive Mike.
There you go.
We got it here.
Brian's bringing positivity to the Minnesota fans here. He says, just want Ferentz to retire slash maybe even get fired before he gets Big Ten win number 152. Getting thumbs down and everything. Oh, I know. I tell you, I don't try to normally tell people who I root for, just because I think when I do that, people talk about how biased I am and stuff like that. But I am rooting for Minnesota in this game. It's not that I dislike Iowa, but there's just something about Max Brosmer I really like. And yep. PJ Fleck to unlock him and have him be a better quarterback. And I really, really like Darius Taylor. I love the way he runs. Very, very entertaining back. So, all right, Zach. Well, we better move on before I suck up to Minnesota fans too much. So, let's get to Rutgers, Virginia Tech. Rutgers, Virginia Tech in this one. Rutgers has good numbers, but they haven't played anybody yet. So it's been two games where it was actually kind of close at halftime in both games, but Rutgers offense exploded a little bit more and their defense played much better in the second half. And so their numbers are actually pretty favorable. Ninth in scoring offense, 45.6 points per game. Sixth in third down offensive conversion percentage. The kicker here, 110th in third down defense. Zach, what's going through your mind in this game?
So preseason, I think we both picked Virginia Tech to win this game. It's at Lane Stadium. My mood on this game has actually shifted quite a bit for a couple reasons. One, I think the bye week actually came at a really good time for Rutgers, because I think, to your point, that third down defense, they just have not been healthy. Like, obviously, Teray has been hurt. Like, he's out for the season, but they had a bunch of other defensive injuries that they were working through, including their top linebacker, who I'm forgetting his name. I'm going to look him up here in a minute. Tyreen Powell was a little gimpy. Other guys that were out for them as well. And they don't have the depth like a top tier Big Ten team. So I think that showed up in some of those games. The other thing that concerns me for Virginia Tech, their run defense is terrible. I mean, they're averaging giving up over 5 yards a carry to terrible teams. Like, not Howard terrible, but I mean, they lost to Vandy. They were close with Marshall at the half. They were close with Old Dominion at the half. And the reason why is because they couldn't stop the run. Well, what does Rutgers want to do? They want to run the dang ball. And Kyle Manunga is one of the best running backs in the country. I think that offensive line has had time to gel. And I think, you know, Kali Akmanis has not been excellent. I wouldn't even say he's been good, but he's been adequate. And I think he gets enough in the passing game with Demir Miller, with Christian Dremel, that it keeps the defense honest. And I think Rutgers wins. I think they control the clock. I think they kind of suck the air out of the game. And I think they win. I think it's close. I think it's closer than a year ago. Remember, they won 35-16 a year ago. But I've got them 28-20 in this game.
28-20. All right. I'm going to pick Rutgers as well. I have them. It's a little bit closer for me, 27-24. I tend to agree with the points that you're making. I also think Rutgers secondary is just really, really good this season. They're doing a great job in coverage. Not just that, I think the linebackers in them are covering very well too. The run defense has been a little suspect in some areas, like you mentioned. So if Virginia Tech can run the ball a little bit on their own, or against that run defense, they could find some success there. But I mean, people are talking about this quarterback, Dupreez, or however you say his name. They were talking about the Virginia Tech quarterback being one of the best in the ACC. If that's your strength coming in against Rutgers, good luck, because I think this Rutgers secondary is legit. I think it's probably a top 10, top 15 secondary in the nation, and they've played like it so far. Again, I know it's not been great competition, but they've played like it so far. And so I think Athan Kaliak-Manis is getting more and more comfortable, not just with the offense, but with the guys around him. You have to remember, I mean, these are all new guys he's playing with. Manungai, Daimir Miller coming in from the FCS level. Like, that's going to be a huge thing for him to... I know Dylan's in the chat. I have to not look when I'm trying to talk when Dylan's in the chat. But... darn it, Dylan, you threw me off.
You threw him off his groove.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a game where Rutgers really relies on their offense to score enough points to win this game, because I think Virginia Tech has a better offense. And even though, like I said, Rutgers has a better secondary, I think Virginia Tech is going to find success at home scoring the ball. It's going to have to be Rutgers' offense that makes it happen here. I think Rutgers' offense is good enough to do that, primarily because of Kyle Manungai. Kyle Manungai is one of the best running backs in the nation, and also you have that offensive line there to consider as well. And so for me, like I said, picking Rutgers in this one, 27-24, I think the offense is enough. I think Virginia Tech has too many holes in what they're trying to do. Like you said, the run defense, I could see Kyle Manungai 200-plus yards in this game, two or three touchdowns, and that's how you see it happen.
Yeah, and I mean, just remember too, they have Sam Brown in there as well, who's a decent back. I mean, they have good depth at running back, and Manungai is going to have the lion's share of that, but they have other backs behind him that I think might have big days too.
Yes, I agree. And if anybody was wondering, Dylan says, I'm not on my own podcast tonight, so I'm in the comments here. Aren't you so lucky? Yes, we are so lucky, Dylan, that you skipped out on your own podcast just to come here. And Positive Mike, he says, not hard for a QB in the ACC to look good with guys like DJU. I definitely think that pick was bad to say he was the best over, Cam Ward. He's kind of really good quarterback. But, yeah, I mean, other than Cam Ward and Kyle McCord, there's really not any other great quarterbacks in the SEC that I can think of. I know the Boston College quarterback's been doing well. I think that's probably more because of Bill O'Brien than it is, you know, him himself. And I'm not trying to discredit the player. I just think Bill O'Brien is a really good offensive mind. You look anywhere he's gone, he's made the quarterback better. So that's just track record and what he's done. So I guess other than Bryce Young, but he had Bryce Young for both years, so you can't really say he made him worse at all, because he had him both years. He's better than he is in the NFL, so know that much. Dylan says, I'm battling a cold. These students are walking germs. Yes, that is how we got sickness in our house, because my wife is a teacher, and brought it home. And she just keeps getting sick again. Like, she starts feeling better, and then she goes to school, and she gets sick again. It's like, we need a week off or something.
Yeah.
All right, one more. Brasco Rascal says, Rutgers running back average around 185 yards per game, only second so that RB to that RB at Boise State. Yes, Ashton Gentry, who is just fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
Running back. So, yeah, very, very impressive running attack that Rutgers have, which will be the thing that gets in the win. So, All right, we're going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Michigan State, Boston College, and USC, Michigan.
Boom.
The Big Ten Huddle is brought to you by The College Huddle, the largest fan-led college sports podcast community on the internet. With contributors from 70 different schools, you will get in all kinds of analysis from all over the country. Go visit thecollegehuddle.com to find your team and read articles from all across so many fans and contributors. The College Huddle is fan-made, fan-driven, and fan-fueled. Oh, we're late. Imagine that. Hey, Zach. We're running late again.
Oh, dear.
All right.
That's all
right. That's all right. We'll continue to give the analysis here. All right, Michigan State versus Boston College. This is an interesting game. Michigan State, I think, is better than people maybe thought at the beginning of the year. That win at Maryland definitely helped the prestige of who they are. However, Boston College was ranked last week, and they lost to a very good Missouri team. Now, I do not believe, yes, they are not ranked anymore. You can argue whether you should be ranked after you lose a game you're supposed to lose, but you know that's the nature of the AP poll for you. I think if Michigan State wins this game, I think they're ranked, right? I mean, you ranked Illinois. You have to get Indiana this week, even though Indiana plays Charlotte. It's not going to be a great opponent, but still, I mean, everything that Indiana's numbers are and how high, I mean, dude, Indiana has a, and I'm not trying to, you know, go off on an Indiana tangent here, but Indiana has a higher percentage on ESPN FPI to make the playoffs than like Clemson, Michigan, and there's Oklahoma State. Like, they have a higher percentage than some of these other teams that are, have historically been very high and are still high this season. But Michigan State, I think if they win this game, they're putting themselves a little bit more up there in that echelon. Now, Aiden Childs is a very good talent, don't get me wrong, but he is still young, and he does play like he's young, right? He's kind of a gunslinger, kind of puts the ball in harm's way more times than he shouldn't. However, Nathan Carter and Katron Lynch Adams, they are both a very good tandem running back duo, probably one of, if not the best. I know they're not the best. One of the best in the Big Ten this season. And I think it's a little bit underrated for what they're able to do. However, if Aiden Childs does get the team in trouble here and throw too many interceptions and you know, get picked off too much, Boston College is going to do what Maryland couldn't do, which is capitalize on those turnovers and make you pay for them. Michigan State has got to do a better job of protecting the ball in this one and putting their defense in good spots, because their defense is good. Their defense has some good players on it, but they have to be in good spots. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like it's really hard for me to trust Michigan State because of the youth at quarterback, and it has nothing to do with the talent. Like, I think
the way the ball comes off his hand, dude, he is uber talented. You're right. It's just it's youth.
Yeah. And I think that's the issue, is it's, and it's not just youth for Childs. It's the lack of continuity that you're getting everybody together. And so it's hard for me to think, well, can Michigan State beat this Boston College team? That being said, I am skeptical of how good Boston College really is, because they got ranked on the backs of a ranked win against Florida State. Florida State stinks. And like,
some would argue they're just cursed.
Yeah. I think
the guy has to eat the poop. I'm not trying to get on tangent, but go ahead.
I'm going to go throw up now. The fact that people want him to do it is just awful. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. Anyway, I should be better with that stuff with having three kids, but that's besides the point. I just don't know how good Boston College is. And even with the close loss against Mizzou, it kind of felt like they got up early. Mizzou kind of took some time to get going, and then they kind of turned it on, and it was 27-14 late. They scored to make it look more respectable. So I feel like I don't have a good read on this, because I'm like, is Michigan State, like, are they starting to gel? And if they start to gel, are they actually the better team? And is Boston College a little bit of fool's gold? I went with the more experienced quarterback and the more experienced team in general. And I think Michigan State's going to get themselves in trouble. And I don't think Childs is going to be able to save them like he did against Maryland. I've got Boston College in a low scoring game, 20-17.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad pick. I have Boston College 27-17. I really like some of the talent that Michigan State has, and I really like the coaching job that Jonathan Smith has done. I look at it and I say, I think that Aiden Childs is probably going to throw a pick or two.
Yep.
And when that happens, like I said, I think Boston College is going to capitalize on it. I think they're probably going to get at least one touchdown for two picks if that happens, and they're probably going to get a field goal on the other one. And so I really like Nick Marsh. I think that, you know, he's an outstanding freshman this season. But you look at what this Michigan State team has been, they've won off that defense, you know, doing a good job, even in pressure situations. I don't know if I like this defense more than I like the passing attack of Boston College. Now, they haven't been able to run the ball super well, but the key here for Michigan State is going to be getting pressure on the quarterback, getting pressure on Boston College's quarterback. They have 11 sacks on the season, which is very good. I think that's like top 10 in the nation. I just had it pulled up. Yeah, that's tied for six in the nation. 11 sacks. Yep. The only Big Ten team with more is Indiana, who we were just talking about. So 11 sacks in the season, that's fantastic. That's what you want to see. But can they get to the quarterback enough against Boston College? I'm not even just talking about sacks. I'm saying also pressures, hitting the quarterback, making him uncomfortable, making him move around in the pocket. If they're able to do that, I like Michigan State's chances a lot more.
Yep.
Because I think Michigan State will then, you know, be able to put themselves in advantageous situations on third down, but they also might be able to get some turnovers as well, which is definitely going to help out Aiden Childs and this rushing attack. To me, Michigan State can't get down early. You have to be able to ride this rushing attack. You can't rely on Aiden Childs to throw the ball all over the field. That's when the interceptions are going to happen. If you can stay close, stay within a field goal for the first half and not get down too much, I think they have a chance. But if you see Boston College come out and score two quick scores and, you know, Michigan State is down 10 to nothing, 14 to nothing, I think they're in some more trouble there.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Both of us are obviously picking Boston College. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be very telling if Michigan State's lines hold up and are overpowering like they did a little bit against Maryland. I think if that happens, that's when I start to think, okay, Michigan State has a real chance not just to win, but win decisively. Because if they have that edge on the lines and they can just run at them, that then becomes really tough. And like, I think Castellanos I think he protects the ball well enough, but I think that could be a tough ask for Boston College to have to deal with a team that they can't stop running the ball.
And I will give credit to Boston College. Boston College has had a good run defense so far this season. Yeah. It's not been anything spectacular, but it's been good. Michigan State has got to be able to run the ball, because if you cannot find that success, you're going to have to rely completely on Aiden Childs' arm, and I think you rely on that too much, he's going to turn the ball over. Now, it could prove me wrong. Aiden Childs come out there and throw the ball 40 times and not have a single pick. If he does that, more power to him. This Michigan State team is way better than we think they are. And they're better than we thought they were against Maryland, too, because I'm pretty sure you and I picked Maryland in that game.
We both picked Maryland, too.
So... but we'll see. Maybe Jonathan Smith and Michigan State will just keep doing what they have to do to win. Maybe they don't do it in the fanciest fashion ever, but they just keep doing what they have to do to win. So we'll see. All right, Zach, we have big game here. USC at Michigan in the Big House. So prior to this season, people were picking Michigan like crazy, right? I mean, I think at one point they were like favored by eight points or something like that. Well, the line has shifted, and now they're favored, USC is favored many places by 5.5. I think it says 6.5 down there. I took that picture earlier today, but I think that has since moved to 5.5 at many places. I don't know if it has an ESPN, but at many places it's moved to 5.5. Michigan bringing in Alex Orji. I think they're also going to have Kalel Mullins be the starting running back in this game. I don't know how you don't, right? I mean, Donovan Edwards is a home run threat, but he's not offering you the down-to-down consistency you need from a starting running back. And Michigan is probably going to be down Colston Loveland. We don't know that for sure, but it sounds like even if he is playing, he will be at least limited to some point. So my question to you, Zach, is with all this stuff going on with Michigan, do they stand a chance, or are you like, no way USC is going to come out on top of this one?
I think a lot of people are overvaluing the USC win over LSU. Now, I think LSU is really good. I've maintained that they are number two in my power rankings because of that win. I've said it several times. They out-coached LSU. And LSU has not.
And the shutout against Utah State was impressive too. I mean, Utah State, I'm not trying to say they're a great team or anything, but still.
It is.
You get credit for a shutout.
It is. It is. I think you and I were talking off air, and I think I won't steal your thunder. But I'll just say this. I think LSU has shown that they are maybe not as good as we thought. They should have lost to Southern Cal, the other they should have lost to South Carolina, the other USC. But the refs decided to make it 15 on 11 or 18 on 11 or however many refs there are, with just egregious calls. They gave up 21 points to Nichols State. I mean, that tells me that what USC did on offense was actually kind of average, although I love Miller Moss. Like, that's not a shot at Miller Moss. It's just that what they did against LSU was average. And defensively, I think if LSU actually sticks with the running game, I think they score more than 24. And so here's my concern for this game. I think if you're saying that Michigan's going to go to a wing T with Alex Orji, I think that actually might be hard for USC to defend against. I don't think this is going to be like Texas USC or Texas Michigan. No. I don't think it's that at all.
Yeah.
I think Michigan stands a very good chance because I don't think USC is as good as the LSU win may have suggested a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I do not see this game in any way, shape, or form like Texas, Michigan. There are some people out there predicting that's going to happen. I don't think you've watched the teams if you think that's going to happen.
Yep.
Blue Wolverine is here. He says, greetings, good people. You made it just in time for the Michigan talk, Blue Wolverine. Or you're just now commenting. You've been here the whole time. If that's the case, thanks for being here. But I don't think this is going to be anything like the Texas-Michigan game. I am predicting USC to win and USC to win by a couple scores, but I think that's going to come later in the game because I think Michigan's defense is going to be worn down. I agree with you that the wing T is going to be difficult for if they do decide to run that, which I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Kirk Campbell, so yeah. I look at something and say, this is what you should do. I've said that multiple times. Kirk Campbell has done the opposite, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully Sherron Moore has put his hand more into this offense and been like, Kirk, you got to figure this out, dude, because this offense should be better. We have more playmakers than you realize. And, you know, it's not the entire offensive line. Like, Miles Hinton has not been terrible. The left guard, I forget his name off the top of my head, has not been terrible. And you put who's the better center? I'm getting mixed up. Is it Crippen? You put Crippen in. That offensive line was much better with Crippen in. So,
yep.
Are they going to make the right decision and put the right guys in there? If you have Crippen in there, if you have Kalel Mullins in there the majority of the time, which I guess if you have the wing T, you can have Mullins and Donovan Edwards in there. But you have Mullins and Crippen in there. Now, I don't know what you do about right tackle. Evan Link, I think you're stuck with him. Mm-hmm. But that's more of a pass protection thing, which to me, if I'm Michigan, I don't drop back any more than 12 times in this game.
Yep.
This is Penn State 2.0, all right? We're just going at it with the run, and we're hitting USC. Now, I do think Dan Lynn, better defensive coordinator,
yes. And
he's going to be prepared. He's going to be able to get his guys ready for this. I do think, you know, saying Alex Orji is your quarterback this early in the week was a little skeptical if that was a good idea or not.
Yeah.
Which I sound like a hypocrite. I've been one to say I don't think it's that big of a deal that you have to wait the entire offseason to name your starting quarterback. Like, some people wait till like the week before to name their starting quarterback before the first game. I think that's kind of lame. In this situation, Sherron Moore was playing with house money. He could have made USC think, hey, you don't know what kind of offense we're going to run. You don't know if we're going to have the wing T spread option with Alex Orji or if we're going to run the traditional pro style with Davis Warren. You got to prepare for both. Now that he has said it's Alex Orji, guess what? Prepare for the option. Prepare for the wing T. Prepare for all of this quarterback running stuff because they know that's Alex Orji's game. Now, I do think it gets a little overblown, the whole, like, Alex Orji can't throw thing. He's thrown multiple touchdown passes so far this season, so obviously he can throw. But, again, I probably wouldn't have him throw any more than maybe 12, 15 times at most this game. And that's going to be a big thing for Michigan. Can their defense, and I think they're good enough, can their defense keep USC off the board enough at the beginning of the game so that they don't get behind and have to trust Alex Orji's arm and they can continue to run their offense the way they want to run it? If they can do that, Michigan will win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Blue Wolverine, he's saying some stuff here. He says, Michigan's success will depend on online play and play calling slash substitutions. I cannot even call the game because of so many unknown skill. Unknown stills. Yes, I agree. Orgy is starting, but don't be surprised if Tuttle doesn't make an appearance. Yeah, I tell you, I'm having a hard time with the Tuttle stuff because we hear that he's getting better and then we hear there's setbacks in practice. And so, like, I don't know. For me, it's like, I'm not going to believe Tuttle plays until he plays. Am I wrong on that, Zach?
I'm of the opinion that it doesn't matter if Tuttle plays or not. I don't think he's good enough. Like, he's a 7-year guy for a reason and he hasn't started for a reason. So.
Well, and like, also the other part of it too is like, commit to a quarterback, right?
Yeah. It's
week 4.
Yeah. I agree. I like to do that with quarterbacks this late in the game. I think you just got to commit to Orgy at this point. And yeah, do you want me to go for score prediction here or what would be helpful?
Sure, Score prediction.
I think USC struggles early. I think USC's offense is more predicated on the talent of receivers, not as much on the offensive line. So I think early they get a couple three. I think Michigan gets a couple three and outs. I think they try to sit on the ball, you know, try to, you know, run as much as they can with the quarterback. I think Michigan's leading at half. Like, I think maybe like a 13-10 something type of score. I think Michigan's defense is going to get tired ultimately, and they don't have the depth. I think Michigan scores, they get to the high 20s again, 27. I think Michigan makes it look more respectable at the end. I have 27-23.
Wow. Okay. So I have 27-13. And like I said, I think that's predominantly because of what you said, the defense there at the end of the game. I think the biggest thing for me in this game is the defensive line for Michigan. Can the defensive line for Michigan get the run stops, and can they get pressure on Miller Moss consistently enough to alter those throws and possibly create a few turnovers? Because I think that's what the Michigan offense is going to need in order to score a couple of times. I think they'll bring the ball down the field once or twice, field goal, touchdown. But I think if you want additional scores outside of that, you're going to need some help from the defense, you know, getting some turnovers and putting yourselves in good situations, possibly a blocked punt or something like that. I mean, that's something that, you know, Michigan definitely has in their arsenal. They've been a team who's had good special teams in the past. Don't watch the Alabama game, but they've had good special teams in the past. So to me, if that defensive line can hold up the entire game, get pressure on Miller Moss, stop the run, I think that's going to be huge for them. I just think it's really, really hard when you don't play as much depth as you did last year for your defensive line to stay fresh and to stay good the entire game. USC, they're going to have to keep USC from having big, long, you know, 10, 12, 15 play drives.
Yep, agreed. I think the turnover thing, I will say, if the defensive line plays up to their potential for Michigan, that is I don't think it wins them the game. But that, I think I'm banking on that in my prediction, that I think their defensive line plays more like we expected them to against Texas. And I do think that causes havoc and turnovers. If they don't, it will be a long day for Michigan.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. One more thing I want to bring up, and then we'll get to a couple comments because we have a few more in here. You know who ESPN SP Plus has predicted to win this game, Zach?
The way you said it, I'm going to say Michigan.
They do. They have Michigan projected to win 30-26.
I don't know if S&P Plus...
If Michigan scores 30 points on this USC defense, I don't care how many turnovers they got. This USC defense is dead again. They are dead to me if they let Michigan score 30 on them. And I'm not trying to be critical of Michigan's offense. It's just, you know, trying to put in a new running back, trying to put in a new quarterback. Like, you have all that happen, and then they score 30 on them. Like, Yeah, I'm not going to be a believer in this USC defense if that happens. I'll actually probably believe more in this Michigan offense, which I would have at the beginning of the year if they had started Alex Orji. I said this at the beginning of the year. Alex Orji is your path to a better offense, but, you know, Sherrod Moore didn't listen to me, so maybe I need to give him my number again.
I would say maybe S&P Plus is projecting 3 pick sixes for Will Johnson start the Heisman campaign.
You know what? Will Johnson will be carried around the campus if that 3 pick sixes. All right. Blue Wolverine says our kicker keeps us in it deep into the game. Zavada, which I love saying that last name. Zavada. Where are they getting all these kickers from? That's what I want to know. You have Moody, whoever they had last year. I forgot his name already. And then Zavada, like, what in the world? Do they just have a kicker pipeline somewhere? That's what I want to know.
It's called Australia. Oh, wait, no, that's punters.
I was going to say, that's punters. And then Sean, a little off topic here, but he says, just watch the recap show from earlier. I love how angry you guys got, particularly Zach with Mr. Fish, this goal line call. Hilarious.
Yeah, He deserved it.
Do we get a little too angry sometimes, Zach? I think sometimes we might, but the people like it. You know, who are we to stop?
That's fair.
And Sean also says, I think UM keeps it close, or keeps this game a lot closer. USC is really hard to gauge at this point based on LSU's play since. I agree.
If Sean knows ball.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't judge anybody for having second in their power rankings. I have them second in my power rankings as well. Let's just move on, Zach. Just move on. I have them second in my power rankings as well, but I do agree, like, that LSU win at the beginning of the year does not look nearly as good as it did, does not look nearly as good now as it did then, and so it does make me question, should I move them down? But I don't know who I move them down for. I don't think I move them down under Nebraska, because Nebraska hasn't beaten anybody, and Oregon looked good for one game. Do I move them down under Oregon? No. And Penn State almost lost to a MAC team, so.
Yeah. What do I do? Well, and I think that this isn't where we're going, but I think we're talking about maybe the relative disappointment of the Big Ten thus far, is that I think we thought maybe there were 4 to 6 teams that really could be in that upper tier. And I think right now the only team that's demonstrated that they belong in that upper tier is Ohio State. And it's not because of who they played, but because
they... Indiana, Zach, don't forget Indiana.
We're not going there. I'm just messing with you. They've proven that they're not in the bottom. That's what they've proven.
Dave is booing me still. Sorry, Dave. All right, we better move on, Zach. Yeah, we're never going to get to this Nebraska game if we don't move on now.
Oh, and Nebraska fans will be very sad, so let's do it.
They were already calling me out earlier for saving it till the end, so that way they watch it till the end. You know the bit. All right, quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to talk Nebraska, Illinois. Homefield is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Homefield brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Homefield digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. TBTH, the Big Ten Huddle. Easy to remember. JR, Zach Guggenheim from Big Ten Football Talk here, breaking down the final game, Illinois at Nebraska. Zach, Illinois is ranked, don't know if you've heard, 24th in the nation. Nebraska also ranked 22nd in the nation. Not a top 20 matchup, but top 25.
Yep.
I'm really excited for this game, Zach. I think that there are a lot of things that Nebraska does well, and there are a lot of things that Illinois does well. That's going to be very interesting to see how these two teams match up and how they go at each other. I have started with every single game so far. I didn't do that on purpose. I just get excited. So I am going to let you start with this game. Be the gracious host that I am.
Thank you. This is a really fascinating game, because I think each team has, I think, strengths and weaknesses that really do pair well against each other, right? So I think Illinois secondary against Raiola is a really fascinating matchup. You've got a dynamic quarterback who's a freshman, who really does get his first test, right? Colorado wasn't a test. I know Travis Hunter's all world, whatever. It wasn't a test. Just avoid that, right? So
it was a test for facing a couple NFL players, and can you hold them in check? Are you good enough to hold a couple NFL players in check?
Right.
That was the test.
Yeah. It wasn't a test. So Illinois is a legitimate test. I think for Illinois, it's really a question is, can this offensive line hold up against what might be a top three defensive line in the conference? If not top three, top five.
Yeah, I mean, they're top three, top five in the conference, and there's so many good defensive lines in the conference. That makes you good for top 10 in the nation, I think.
Yeah, so I think that's a really, like, it's a fun chess match. And I think the coaches are similar, right? Like, I think Bielema is, you know, hard-nosed guy, obviously did not have a great year last year, but in general, his track record has been hard-nosed, you know, Wisconsin style of offense. And Matt Rhule, who's changing a culture. So I think it's a really fascinating game. I think you made a great point about this a week ago, that Illinois' offensive line last week, they didn't hold up super well. And while I think part of that was sleepwalking after a big win against Kansas, they have not looked great the past couple weeks, and Kansas is not Nebraska. And that concerns me. And so I think Altmaier keeps them in the game for a while. I think he's able to make some plays. Pat Bryant will be the best receiver in this game. So I think he might make some plays.
Really, better than Zachary Franklin.
Mm. Illinois has the better receivers in this game.
Illinois will have the best receiver in this game.
Yes. Okay. I think I actually am really high on Pat Bryant, but I appreciate you bringing up.
No, Zachary I am Franklin. Too. I am too. I just think Zachary Franklin probably has a bigger name because he's been around so much, but go ahead. Sorry.
Because he has the actual bigger name.
Yeah. Well, that's
sorry. Bad jokes are bad. I think they are more dynamic on the perimeter. And I think that's going to give, I think it's going to be a fun matchup with Tommy Hill on the outside. I just think the running game is going to be too much for Nebraska. So I think it's close at half, but I think Nebraska takes over in the second half. I don't think this is our big Rayola game. I think this is a big Dante Dowdell game. I think at the end, Illinois they have to do too much in the passing game. I do think Altmaier throws a pick or maybe gets a sack fumble, not because he has a bad game, but I just think it's going to be tough with that offensive line.
Yeah, no, that was exactly where I was going to go with this as well. What's the offensive line for Illinois? We have a ton of comments in the chat. We'll get to you guys' comments here in just a minute. Sorry, guys. I'm still getting over my sickness, so my throat is drying out here every few minutes. But the offensive line for Illinois is a huge question mark, especially because of the defensive line for Nebraska and just how powerful they are. And I mean, the way that Nebraska plays their defense too, they can have guys coming at you from every single direction. It's a very well-run defense, a very creative way of putting pressure on the quarterback. They don't blitz a ton. If anybody's looked out there at my blitz rates that I put out every Wednesday morning, they don't blitz a ton, but they make it feel like they're blitzing almost every single snap
simulated
because
pressure.
Of how many guys are close to the line of scrimmage. And also how athletic they are, they can recover coming off the line of scrimmage. So you could see a play, and it's happened before, you could see a play where Nebraska has like seven guys on the line of scrimmage, you know, three defensive linemen four defensive linemen and a few linebackers as well. Like all of your guys who are in the box, except for one, you always keep one linebacker back, are on the defensive line, and only three or four of them come. You know, I mean, it's just the way that they operate things, and it's very impressive. And Tony White has coached this defense very, very well to make it so that can happen. And so my biggest thing is not only can Illinois block them, but is Illinois' offensive line going to be able to dissect what Nebraska is doing to know where that pressure is coming from? Because we've seen it happen. We saw it happen against Colorado's offensive line where they brought three and they had a free rusher.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know football, like, there's at least five guys blocking every single play. So when you bring three and one guy's free, That's no good. But that's the way it's Tony bad White math. Is yeah. Not good. Bad math for the offense. So but before we get back to you, Zach, for your score prediction, I want to go through some of these comments here because I think they have some really good talking points to go through. Jason says, Illinois has a line problem. Both are bad. Nebraska needs to keep the ball away from Illinois' secondary, which is legit, and they'll be fine. I think Illinois, the interior of Illinois' defensive line is fine. I do, their edge rushers, I can see a little bit of issues there, but I think the interior of the Illinois defensive line is fine. Mm-hmm. But definitely that offensive line, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
Philip with the ILL. Yes, we know. We know you're rooting for the Illinois here, Philip, and we appreciate that. And Mr. Morris, he was here from the USC Michigan conversation. Fight on, fellas. Blessed Tuesday. Thank you, Mr. Morris, for being here. We appreciate
Thank you, that. Sir.
Philip says, freshman Raiola will make freshman mistakes against the best defense he's seen so far. This was another talking point I wanted to bring up to you, Zach.
Yep.
We haven't really seen Raiola make a ton of freshman mistakes. Again, you can bring up the competition. It's not been great. Yep. But still, it's common, even against bad competition,
yeah,
to see freshmen make mistakes. However, Dylan Raiola, only one pick so far this season. He's not had a whole bunch of, like we said, not a lot of freshman mistakes so far. Does he stay cool, calm, and collected enough? Or will the guys like Miles Scott, Xavier Scott, this ball-hawking secondary that has been able to pick off, you know, so many people that they've played against, are they going to bait him into those mistakes and really cost Nebraska?
I think they will bait him at least once, maybe twice, and I don't think it will cost Nebraska. You know, Sean Garner is asking for a who wins. I'll say I think Nebraska wins 24-13. I just think, and I, someone else had said Altmaier won't make the mistakes that Raiola will. Philip did, and I agree. I think Altmaier is going to be steady throughout this game. The problem is the structure is just going to be in chaos for a good chunk of this game for him, and so Raiola might make more mistakes. It's not going to matter because he's going to have the better support system overall. Like Altmaier is going to have to do a little bit more himself. And while I think the receivers are better, I think he's just going to be running for his life quite a bit tomorrow, or not tomorrow, on Friday. And I think that's what's going to make this game really difficult for Illinois.
Yeah, I'm torn. I can see a path for both teams to win this game. I can see the Illinois defense, freshman Raiola making mistakes. You know, Raiola hasn't faced a defense this good yet. I can see that path. I can also see the path of dominant Nebraska defense and that defensive line taking over and making, you know, basically Luke Altmaier's life just hell for this game, right? I can see that happening as well. I think ultimately what it comes down to, and this is what I always go back to whenever I'm at a standstill, is the trenches. Who's going to win in the trenches? I think Nebraska is going to do a better job of blocking for the run game. I think Nebraska is going to do a better job of protecting the quarterback. And I think Nebraska has the better defensive line. I'm not saying that, you know, Dylan Raiola will be clean. I'm not saying that Dylan Raiola won't throw a pick or two. But I'm with you. I think that at the end of the day, Nebraska is going to win this game in the trenches. You're going to come away from this one and say Nebraska won this game in the trenches. And I think it's going to reflect that on the scoreboard. So for me, I'm picking Nebraska 24-17 with the caveat, though, with the caveat, kind of like I did with the Minnesota-Iowa game. Like if Illinois does capitalize on these turnovers and they are able to get some big plays against Nebraska, because say they have a long drive against Nebraska and they get a turnover and then they're able to come out there and score in just a few plays because the defense is gassed. Like if that kind of stuff happens, I could definitely see a path for Illinois to win. Just, when I look at the game, that path is far less likely than strong trench play and a defense that is going to dominate your offensive line. And I don't like saying dominate because I think that gets used too much, but I just think this defensive line for Nebraska is that much better.
Yeah. One more point on that too, JR. It's in Lincoln. And sacks and pressures and turnovers for Nebraska are going to be that much more, are going to be that much bigger because that's going to get the crowd to stay in the game. I think if this game were in Champaign, I would at least have it closer. And I might even say, I think Illinois might win because that stadium's a wind tunnel. I mean, it's insane how that wind swirls in there. And like, again, the crowd really does matter. That Nebraska's atmosphere for Colorado was insane. And it's going to be like that again for this game with a top 25 matchup on a Friday night. So I think the home field advantage, certain stadiums, it doesn't really matter. I think it's going to matter in this game.
I think it will too. I think these Nebraska fans are starving. I think they're going to bring the heat. And I think that it's going to be, I would not be surprised to see 3 or 4 false starts for Illinois in this game, just because of how much, like, you think you've seen the whiteout at Penn State. I'm not saying it's going to be the whiteout heavy or something like that, but this could be one of the best atmospheres we see in college football this year, with those fans and how rabid they are. Let's get some score predictions from the comments. Philip says Illinois 24-20. We're seeing some consistency here. Dave says Nebraska 24-10. So I think we're on the right path here with somebody scoring 24. David says 24-27. Illinois wins. Philip says Illinois getting 9 points at Nebraska is insane. Did I say that? No, I said 24-17. Did you say 9 points?
Well, I think he means the line. The line.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Sorry. I thought he meant they score that. Oh, and Kent was in here earlier. I passed up Kent's comment. He said, I'm buying an Altmyer jersey if Illinois wins. Self-imposed punishment for me being wrong about Illinois. Kent, you put your money where your mouth is, man. I appreciate it. You also probably just want an Altmyer jersey a little bit too. So.
That might be true. Dude, I love Kent. Kent's the man. Awesome.
Dave says, I love Nebraska fans. They always show up, even other team is, and they haven't committed her carry yet. Her carry yet?
I don't know what that means.
I believe you may have typoed it because the C is capitalized, but yeah, Dave, if you could clear that up, I appreciate it. So I agree with Keith. Low scoring game, first team of 20 wins. And I think that first team of 20 will probably be Nebraska. But this is going to be an awesome game to watch. I mean, this is going to be probably one of my favorite games in the Big Ten to watch this year. I think USC Michigan has the potential to be up there. Oh, here we go. Harry Carey. Haven't committed Harry Carey yet. There we go. Philip Bro Casual gets a throwback Altmyer jersey. Oh, here we go. And some stats from Kent. It's also their 400th sellout. They won 100, 200, and 300. Nebraska wins. I stole that stat from Twitter. I'm not giving credit. Sue me.
I think you just gave credit to Twitter.
Well, you give credit to all of Twitter. All of Twitter was out.
Yes, all of Twitter. Yeah, that's fair. So.
All right, anything else in this game, Zach, you want to mention? I think we covered about all of it. You know, the Illinois wide receivers are going to have to step up. It's going to have to be a big game for them. If the Illinois offensive line is able to pass protect better and get some better running game, you know, that's going to be a huge for them. But overall, I think this is going to be a great game.
Yeah, I just think it's great that Illinois and Nebraska seem to be trending upward. Because I think we were concerned that maybe Bielema had, like, he wasn't going to be the right guy, which I've always felt like he's a great coach, as much as I don't always like him because of things that he did to Ohio State back in the day.
Understandable.
But, like, I think he's a proven head coach in the Big Ten. And, like, I was really high on Matt Rhule, and I feel like for Nebraska fans, I love seeing that Nebraska is trending in the right direction, because the past 7 years have been just awful for Nebraska fans. And I'm so happy that I think we have a legitimate top 25 team this year in this Nebraska team. And I think they're going to be a tough out throughout the season, regardless who they're playing.
I agree. This is going to be a very tough Nebraska team, and they got the right coach to do it too. Matt Rhule is a fantastic head coach. My prediction This is kind of a hot take. Oh, this is a hot take. This isn't kind of a hot take. Tell me how crazy I am, Zach. My prediction, if Matt Rhule and Brett Bielema stick with their schools for the next 5-10 years, I would not be surprised 5 years from now, your top 5 or 6 teams in the Big Ten are Ohio State, Nebraska, Illinois, Oregon, maybe USC or Penn State. I mean, if Lincoln Riley stays, probably USC, but there's always rumors about him with the NFL. I don't know how real those are. But at the same time, like, James Franklin always has a Penn State up there, but is he going to stick around? We talked about him for the Florida job the other day. Yeah. So, I think two of those teams out west are going to be consistently up there in the top five, USC and Oregon. And I think Nebraska and Illinois could be a frequent top five team going forward.
Yeah, I buy Nebraska more than Illinois, but I'll say this. It is shocking that Illinois isn't in the conversation more often because of where they are. Yeah. Like they're the state school in Illinois where Chicago is. You would think that would be like, they can get the NIL going up there. Like that's and not
good talent in Chicago too. I mean, there's not bad talent in Chicago.
It's just, it's getting the right coach. And I think Brett Bielema can be the right coach.
Oh, he definitely can.
Yeah. It's just, he's probably got to continue to adapt to the new world. But I think, I don't know if I would say top five for Illinois, but I think they should be a top half Big Ten team more often than not. And they haven't been.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're building there. I mean, Lovie Smith plummeted that program.
Which is shocking. Yeah. It's shocking that he did so poorly.
Nobody saw that coming. But like the way I look at it is Brett Bielema is just so underrated. He has so many connections with so many high school coaches. We're talking, I mean, Ohio State fans right now are concerned about TJ Alford. He's a linebacker out of Florida. And one of the concerns they have right now is Illinois. A lot of Ohio State fans have no idea why to be concerned about Illinois. Guess what? Brett Bielema knows the head coach down there at Vero Beach, and he has a connection, and Aaron Henry has been around the block too, and he has a connection with him as well. Mm-hmm. So like when you have a connection with the head coach, you have an in, and you can get one of the best players to consider your school. That's how they got the visit for TJ Alford to come up to Illinois, and why he's still slightly, I don't think it's as much as it was before, but still slightly considering them. Brett Bielema is pretty underrated in the Big Ten. And I think once he brings Illinois to be a consistent top five team in the Big Ten, I'm not saying every single year, but like 2 out of 4, 2 out of 3 years, I think people are going to take notice a whole lot more and say, that's the Brett Bielema we knew who was at Wisconsin. And it took him a little while to build it. But if he sticks with Illinois and he doesn't try to go off to Arkansas or something like that, I think that he's going to remind people how good of a coach he is.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So. And I think he's already doing it. And I mean, you look at the schedule this season, like I don't know what I would predict for them, but they are going to be a tough out for everybody on their schedule, maybe with the exception of Oregon. And that's if Oregon continues to be who we thought they were going to be in preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some Illinois people tweeting that they could be 10-2, 9-3 this season. And I saw a bunch of other people saying like, oh no, you're crazy. And I was like, I'm not predicting it's going to happen, but
yeah,
I'm not going to call them crazy for it.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State will be tough. Michigan will be tough, but it's not like, that's not insurmountable.
Illinois has played Michigan tough in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a hard team. It's Illinois to Michigan has been Purdue to Ohio State. I mean, probably not as many wins, but I don't know the complete history there, but a very tough team for Michigan to play.
Yeah. And people like bowl eligibility, like people will say, well, they're ranked 24th. Like they should be aiming for more than a bowl game. Remember, most people were thinking they would miss a bowl game this year.
Yeah.
So like going bowling is progress. And I think they're going to be better than 6-6.
I ranked them with the worst skill players in the Big Ten before they got Zachary Franklin. Which that was a bad decision, Pat Bryant. Showed me. So
yeah,
yeah. All right. What's Dave saying? He says Brett Bammer. Bammer? Said a new nickname, owns the Gophers. I do remember him beating up on the Gophers pretty good when he was at Wisconsin. I don't know how many times they've played since he's been in Illinois, but I do remember him beating up on the Gophers pretty good. David French says, as an Illinois fan, we want to be competitive. We haven't been for so long. First step is getting a bowl every year. That's true. I've heard Sonny say that. He just wants to get to a bowl every single year. And I think I think they're on that path. I think last year was a bit of an anomaly for what you're going to normally see with Brett Bielema, but all I'm going to say, don't be surprised if you keep seeing Illinois get ranked.
Yes.
It's probably going to be more often than not. All right. That's what we got for you tonight, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We do appreciate it. Zach, why don't you tell people where they can find Big Ten Football Talk before we get out of here?
Yes. YouTube, Apple, Spotify. Go over there, subscribe, especially to YouTube. Getting those subscribers up just helps the algorithm, just like it does here. So make sure to go over there, subscribe. JR, I actually just, before we end, I want to give you a huge thank you. You and Eric over at OHIO, the College Huddle, for bringing me in as a College Huddle representative. I don't know how many of you know this. I am going representing the College Huddle to represent them for the Penn State game this Saturday. So I have media credentials. I get to go and ask questions to James Franklin. I'll probably ask him about why he didn't kick an onside kick like Tennessee did against Kent State. I don't know if they'll take that seriously or not. So I probably actually shouldn't ask that. But all that being said, it's a huge thank you to you guys bringing me in. And like me getting to do this is a big reason is because of you guys, because I'm part of the College Huddle. So thank you guys so much.
Well deserved, Zach. We're glad you're part of the huddle, and we're glad that you were able to get media credentials. That's awesome for you, and hopefully you'll be able to go to some more games and do that.
Soon. So yeah, very cool. If any of you guys know how to get media credentials at the schools you love, shoot me a message on Twitter or something, because I'd love to figure out how to do that.
Let's get Zach to Oregon. Get Zach to Oregon.
I want to fight the duck. I want to fight the duck. No, I want to ask the duck questions.
They're going to revoke your credentials when you pop that big duck. It's like, we're going to see on TV a police chase. A police chasing. And so like, Zach, he did it. He popped the duck.
We need to Photoshop this now. Let's do it.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We do appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow night with Kent for a basketball episode, as long as nothing happens there to keep us from that. And then Thursday night, I'll be on here with Andrew from the Nittany Blues podcast. We'll talk about some more games, Northwestern, Washington, Ohio State, Marshall, Penn State, Kent State. We'll talk about those games and probably some other news items and stuff like that as well. If you guys have any other games you want us to talk about with Andrew, let me know. I'll fit those into the schedule as well. But other than that, just appreciate you all being here, and hope you have a great night. See you next time.